Leading Ideas Talks is brought to you by the Lewis Center for Church Leadership of Wesley Theological Seminary in Washington, D.C. Subscribe free to our weekly newsletter, Leading Ideas, at churchleadership.com/leadingideas. Leading Ideas Talks is also brought to you by Leading Like Nehemiah, Rebuilding Together. This 6-session video-based study curriculum lifts up key themes in Nehemiah's witness that can inspire and guide faith leaders today. Regularly $49, this study is just $25 through August 31st. Learn more at churchleadership.com/Nehemiah. How does the story of Nehemiah guide leaders today? In this Leading Ideas Talks episode, Lovett H. Weems Jr. explains why Nehemiah is so relevant to leaders in today's church, and how the book of Nehemiah informs our understanding of a leader's calling and tasks.
Welcome to Leading Ideas Talks, a podcast featuring thought leaders and innovative practitioners. I am Douglas Poe, the director of the Lewis Center, and your host for this talk. Joining me is Dr. Lovett Weems, former director of the Lewis Center and current consultant for the Lewis Center. His latest book, co-authored with Ann Michael, is called Generosity, Stewardship, and Abundance, a Transformational Guide to Church Finance. Today, however, our focus is going to be on leadership and thinking about the book of Nehemiah. Lovett, glad to have you with us today.
Thank you.
I want to start, Lovett, by just asking, why do you think Nehemiah is so popular when it comes to leadership?
I think Nehemiah is someone that most of us can identify with. Here's someone who wants to do God's will, is a man of faith, a man of prayer. He also is someone who cares about the people in his world and what's going on with them. And he wants to help. He wants to help advance God's ways. He wants to help advance the people that with whom he works. But yet, he doesn't know exactly how. And so much of what's going on in Nehemiah is seeing that struggle to know that God is calling me to something, but trying to discern what that is. And then once that happens, following the various stages, and it's more complicated than we often think. But I simply think Nehemiah is someone that it's just very easy for us to identify with, because all of us have faced situations where we know something is not right. We know something needs to be done. But at the moment, we're not sure what God may be calling us to do as part of that solution.
Lovett, I appreciate particularly where you ended and thinking about we know something needs to be done and that God is calling us to do something. We have an adult study, as you know, at the Lewis Center called Leading Like Nehemiah, and you are featured in that study. And in the study, you talk about discerning God's vision. You know, how does Nehemiah then help us to think about discerning God's vision in our congregational settings? Because I think that sort of links to what you were just discussing.
Well, on the one hand, it appears at first glance very simple. It's almost like Nehemiah is giving us a very simple playbook for it happening. That is, in chapter 2, verses 17 and 18, we find a simple 4-part process that can be used in visioning. Now, what we have to keep in mind is it's easy to forget all that went on before that passage, and certainly everything that went on after that. But for this part of it, which discerning is a discerning the vision is a part of what goes on, but enacting the vision is a very, very different thing. So let's look at the four-part outline that he gives. First of all, Nehemiah helps to define reality. He simply says, look at the trouble we're in. Look at the gates. Look at the wall. We're in trouble. So he helps define reality. This did not come out of the blue. He had been hearing these stories from travelers going through for a long time. Also, when he had arrived to help the people, he and a few others one night went out on their own mission to take a look at the walls. And what they saw was devastating. So when Nehemiah names the reality, he's not advancing his own agenda. I mean, Nehemiah is not someone who has spent his whole life wanting to rebuild a wall. He doesn't do walls. He's never been known for building walls. He simply is naming that reality because that's the critical thing that they face. Now, for instance, if someone had said at that moment, we disagree, there would have been no need for an argument. Say, well, let's go again. And let's get some more people to go with us. And if it turns out that the wall is in great shape and the gates are in great shape, fine. We don't need to spend time, energy, and resources on rebuilding a wall. But if not, and here comes the second part, come, let us rebuild the wall. So you have the articulation of what becomes their vision. People ask, from where does a vision come? Does it come from the top, from the bottom? It doesn't matter if it's the right one. Often, a leader will name a vision not because they're smarter or more spiritual, but usually because they've been spending more time thinking about it, praying about it, have access to more information. But in any case, it has to ring true. So number one, help define reality. Number two, what are we going to do about it? Come, let us rebuild the wall. And some heads began to nod. People confirmed. They said, that makes sense to us. We've known that for a long time. That's the third point. And then the fourth point was everyone makes a commitment. Everyone committed themselves to the common good. That may be a governing body vote. It may be a capital campaign, but everyone committed themselves. So we see a four-step process. It seems simple, but in reality, it's not so simple, but is a wonderful outline for us to use.
Love it. Let me follow up. And I love the way you laid that out so nice and easy for our listeners to follow. But as you sort of said, it's not so simple. Let's move to the congregational setting and just pick the easy one, a congregation that's looking to go out and do something in the community, right? The pastor has this vision, the pastor feels a calling. And this may be a chance for you to talk about calling also, but the congregation, you have some people who want to go with him and others who don't. So how do you navigate that? Because, you know, you part of your, what you're saying is he's defining reality, and it could be just as plain as day to the pastor that there's a need for us to get out there. But others are sort of like, well, no, we like how it feels inside the church here. So that's, at least in my opinion, that's where it can become sort of challenging for people.
Absolutely. A vision not only has to be right in that it's a good thing, it has to be right for us. It has to connect. If it doesn't, it won't succeed. That doesn't mean it's a bad idea. It just means the timing's not right or the readiness is not there. And if that's not the case, no matter who the leader is, it's not going to succeed. It may be that you have to take a step back and find something that will connect. So let's think about it from the perspective of this leader who's come up with this vision. They may see this is what God is calling me to do. Well, we all have a calling from God. And no matter where we are, we're trying to live out that calling from God. And other people have callings as well. But God's calling for a leader is not just their personal relationship with God. It also includes a calling from the context. That is, what's going on with the people God has given us? What's most urgent? What's most on their minds? What's most critical in the community we're serving? And then another part of that calling has to do with one's position. As a pastor, one has a tremendous opportunity to set an agenda, to get almost anything talked about anytime you want it to be talked about. You do not have the power to make something happen. Even if you get a vote, it may not happen. So you've got to say, not only what is my position, but what is my relationship to the people? How long have I been here? How much credibility do I have? How much standing? How much integrity do I have? And anyone who knows me knows my commitment to this cause. And then usually it's going to have to begin with listening, talking to some people. That's what Nehemiah did. When people from home would be traveling through where he was working, he would ask them, how are things at home? And they would say, it's not very good. Well, what's the problem? Well, just when we build up a little bit, our adversaries that surround us come in and tear down whatever we've started. And so the spirits of people are very down at this time. So Nehemiah was listening. And so he had a good understanding that this is not my agenda, but it's the right agenda for us to take that next faithful step.
Love it. You've sort of, I believe, covered this, but I just want to see if you have anything to add. You've talked about Nehemiah caring for the people, that a good leader cares for the people, and you've named sort of how he did so and connected that to what we need to do today. Is there anything else you would say that's important in terms of caring for the people?
Well, I've pointed out that he listens to the people. That's a wonderful way to honor people. Leaders need to have the right questions, and they need to be asking those all the time. But you'll also notice that Nehemiah spent a great deal of time in prayer, praying both for the people and for God's inspiration and guidance. Nehemiah was honest with the people. He was able to be a little more direct with the people because they knew him. And he believed that what he was saying would not be anything that would surprise them. And he helps the people take their next faithful step. And that's what we always want from a leader. We want them to treat us well. We want them to be people of integrity. But we also want them to help us deal with our greatest adaptive challenges we have at the moment.
Thank you. I think that does help sort of round it out and really points to the way Nehemiah cared for the people and helped the people have hope, which is critically important. I want to shift gears a little bit. As you know, Lovett, a lot of people, when they think of a leader, they get the picture of almost the old TV movies of this person out there by themselves, taking on all comers. But the reality is, and in the Nehemiah text, he can't do it alone. It requires others to participate in this work with him. Can you share how he goes about building up a team to get the work done and why it's important for leaders not to think of this sort of Lone Ranger model as the way to go?
It's easy for a leader to think that once you have gotten to through the four steps that we find in Nehemiah, everyone has affirmed the vision. Everyone's made a commitment that your role is more in the background. You've done your part. Well, you need to realize you're only 10 or 20% toward accomplishing the vision once you get clarity. Now, it's very hard to get to that first 10 or 20%, but you have to build a team. You need to ask, who are the people without whom this vision cannot become a reality? That's very democratic, because it's not based on the people, it's based on the vision. If the vision is rebuilding the wall, there's likely to be some people that are essential to that task that might not be as essential if it were a different type of vision. But you also have to be thinking of all the stakeholders, who are all the groups whose cooperation is needed. They may not have the equipment needed for the wall. They might not have the technical expertise, but they are stakeholders and their cooperation is needed. Several people have said that in organizations such as the church, usually no one person can say yes to something and make it happen. But almost any group of people can say no to it and cause it to stop, even if it's been approved. So Nehemiah discovered very quickly that despite a unanimous vote, people started complaining and grumbling. It's too hot. It's taking too long. It's costing too much. Some people are not doing their fair share. So Nehemiah did not step back and say, look, we agreed to this. No, he was not reactive, but he was responsive. For example, he discovered that if you assign people to work on the wall nearest where they live, they do better work and they don't complain about it as much. He also found that there were things that could be done, perhaps by people who couldn't do other things, but they could prepare food, they could bring water, they could do a lot of things. And then you have an entire chapter in Nehemiah that's kind of like a bulletin insert in which it says, we want to thank so-and-so for this. We want to thank so-and-so for this. We want to thank so-and-so for this. So there was this realization, not only that it takes a team, but you've got to support them and to encourage them and keep their spirits up.
You sort of headed down this path a little bit, but I'm going to come at it a little bit differently. You talked a little bit about how things can happen that may distract team members. But as you know, whenever you are following a vision or trying to follow God's calling, there are going to be adversaries. And of course, Nehemiah certainly has adversaries. What can you share in terms of the way Nehemiah deals with the adversaries that might be helpful for us today?
Well, the people had been surrounded by adversaries for quite a while, and the advantage was strictly with them because they had more force. The people were not very organized. When Nehemiah came, not only did they have a vision of rebuilding the wall, but he organized the people in shifts, and there were people who were guarding and people who were working and people who were sleeping. And so this created a problem for the adversaries. So what they did is to turn to what we today would call dirty tricks. That is, now they're not going to do a frontal assault with weapons. No, they're going to start rumors and gossip. And so we have this classic scene where Nehemiah himself is up working on the wall, and the adversaries send a delegation, and they say, Nehemiah, if you don't come down and stop this work, we're going to start telling stories about you. We're going to go to the king and say, you know, Nehemiah got permission to be here to help his people, but he's not helping them. He is building up an army to come and overthrow you. That's what we're going to tell about you. So what does Nehemiah do? Nehemiah doesn't say, oh no, don't do that. Nehemiah simply says, I'm doing a great work. I cannot come down. And so he stayed with the task. He had taken account of the adversaries, but he stayed with the task. Leaders face adversaries that may not have weapons and may not be necessarily an organized group. But Nehemiah stayed in that conversation, but he stayed connected to the vision as well. So leaders need to be as responsive as possible, because there will be unforeseen problems. People's lives will be disrupted. Space that was usually used for something may have to be used for something else while this grand dream is being accomplished. But be responsive. Be respectful of adversaries. Stay connected, but keep your eye on the vision as well.
It's interesting, just a quick follow-up. Do you think for leaders in the church today, and I'm just, you know, thinking by analogy, how they can sort of stay focused on what God is calling them to do, even in the midst of people not only threatening to spread rumors and stuff, but actually doing so. So any insights on how you sort of stay with the task and try to help others to stay with the task while all this stuff is swirling around them?
Yeah. Well, I think Nehemiah gives an example here of what might be called taking the high road. He's neither necessarily negotiating nor capitulating. He's simply taking the high road. He's naming what we're about and staying with that. Again, being responsive. And particularly communicating the ultimate goal. And this is something that Nehemiah was able to do. What happens in any group is once that next fateful step is discerned, it's going to be some specific thing. And most people then will only think about that specific thing. For example, with Nehemiah, it was about rebuilding the wall. But Nehemiah had to remind them, you know, we're not in the wall building business. We're in the God business. And this is about the preservation of our faith. This is about doing what God's calling us to do, knowing that after that wall is rebuilt, God is going to have something else for them. So in a congregation, it may be beginning a new service. It may be building a new building. It may be something else. Everyone will want to talk about that specific thing. It's just like during the historic Montgomery bus boycott that began the modern civil rights era. Yes, it was about a bus boycott, but Martin Luther King Jr. and other leaders had to remind the people, don't think this is about a bus boycott only. That's too small. This is about justice. This is part of our larger agenda for justice and equality. So whatever that next step is, leaders have to put it in a larger perspective. This is not about a new service. It's about reaching people God has given us for whom we've not been able to reach. It's not about the new building. It's about the children who will come to faith in that building. It's about what God wanted from this church from day one.
That was very helpful, Lovett. I really appreciate it. I think talking about how you have to put it into the bigger picture will really help people to think about it. As we come and draw this to a close, I've sort of talked about the study the Lewis Center has. I just wanted to give you a chance to talk about why you think this study would be good for church leaders to do in their congregations and how it may be helpful.
Well, I think there are a lot of things that we can learn from Nehemiah that would be very applicable to those who are leaders within a congregation. And so a leadership team might be a good place for this kind of study to be used, because it helps us see that leadership and visioning may seem simple, but it's not. It will help us see that naming what needs to be done is not the same as accomplishing that. That it takes a team, key players and stakeholders working together. There will be setbacks along the way. Everything looks like failure in the middle. And even when successful, there will always be another mountain, another vision. As Nelson Mandela said, that It's like climbing to the top of a great mountain. It's hard to get there, but you finally make it, only to discover there's yet another mountain to climb. And so church leaders can help everyone in the congregation come to know that we're on a journey with God. It did not start with us. It will not end with us. But God is calling us to help write this next chapter, and then another chapter, all knowing that, as Nehemiah says, without God, there is nothing. And with the help of God, we accomplished this.
Love it. This was fantastic. Thank you for being with us today and sharing those wonderful insights related to Nehemiah.
Thank you very much.
On the next Leading Ideas Talks, Jessica Anschutz speaks with Eileen Campbell Reed about how leaders are formed for ministry and the development of pastoral identity and imagination.
Thank you for joining us, and don't forget to subscribe free to our weekly newsletter, Leading Ideas, at churchleadership.com/leadingideas.